Good afternoon and welcome to the 4th Annual Pittsburgh Neighborhood and Community Information System User Conference. My name's Sabina Dietrich. I'm the Director of the Urban and Regional Analysis Program at the University Center for Social and Urban Research, our home for PNCIS, and we really are looking forward to a terrific afternoon. I know for a lot of you, this is round two of Blighted Properties. Upstairs, the Institute of Politics sponsored a morning session on land banking, so we really appreciate the folks that are going to be around to spend a whole day on what to do with blighted properties. I'm going to introduce Bob Braddock. He's the project manager for the PNCIS, and most of you know Bob, and he's done yeoman's duty once again in all the work to get this conference going, and we really appreciate Bob's work. We have Julie Collins and Roshana Chapman in front, our students who are helping organize things, and Rob Keene, of course, does the audios and does a great job with that. This year we've got some sponsors from, again, Pittsburgh Partnership for Neighborhood Development, PPND, helping us once again as a partner in the conference, and this year the Federal Reserve Bank of Cleveland is also a partner in our conference, and we appreciate that. We're going to have, during the break, posters, so remember from about 3 to 3:30 on our program, time for coffee and pastries and conversation and learning about some of the interesting applications that are going on. From the CodeFest group, we also have some posters of folks that were involved in CodeFest in February, so we'll be able to see a lot of really exciting things that are going on with that. Let me first bring up and introduce Paul Kabath, who's Vice President and Community Development Officer in the Community Development Department of the Federal Reserve Bank of Cleveland. We appreciate Paul, the Fed's support in this, and I want to say that he his responsibilities include strategic oversight of the department's work in a range of consumer credit, community reinvestment, and asset building issues with the bank's research and supervision and regulation departments and with other Federal Reserve officers. He also directs research, outreach, and public programs that promote the fair and equal access to credit in the 4th Reserve District, which includes, I will say, Ohio, Western Pennsylvania, Eastern Kentucky, and the Northern Panhandle of West Virginia. We want to welcome our friends from Erie, Alan Kruger, and the COG folks, which is also we were talking about in the Federal Reserve District of Cleveland. So we've got a wide geographical range as well. Paul?
Thank you very much. It's my pleasure to be here. Joe Ott, who is our senior policy analyst out of the Pittsburgh branch, works most directly in Western Pennsylvania, but hearing the topics today, data systems and information, as well as land banking and blighted properties, you're speaking to my heart. That's fundamental issues in our district, and we've done a lot of work, and we're very happy to support efforts such as these. I had the opportunity to speak at a similar effort in Cincinnati. They're looking at combining information so that they can make strategic decisions in that part of our district. This is important, hard, difficult work to figure this out, and I salute you. It's important to have good information. The Federal Reserve believes in that, so you can make strategic decisions and know what works and what's successful. Whether you're evaluating a vacant and abandoned piece of property or some type of policy issue. And to do that, you need the collaboration of a broad variety of folks to come together and share information. And that's really where it gets difficult. That's been our experience and our observation. So again, I salute each and every one of you for your interest, and we're happy to participate in today's event. Thank you.
Thanks, Paul, and again, thanks for the partnership of the Federal Reserve Bank of Cleveland for our 4th Annual Pittsburgh Neighborhood and Community Information System User Conference. I next want to introduce Sarah Dielman Perry, who's the Program Officer at the Pittsburgh Partnership for Neighborhood Development. As those of you who have been here for three times before, you know PPND has been our long-term partner in the conference. Sarah?
Thank you, Sabina. You and Bob have been leaders in providing independent, accurate, up-to-date, timely information that help community leaders understand their neighborhoods. And PPND has sponsored this conference since the beginning because we believe in the power of that information. And we also believe that understanding the information is necessary for real and lasting change. And so that's also the reason that PPND was one of the original supporters of the development of PNCIS several years ago. And together, with all of you as partners, we've made great strides since then in collecting great data, yet we still have significant work to do in understanding it, translating it, and using it for action. And this is especially important to communities that have long histories of shrinking populations, poor educational options, high crime, lack of affordable and high-quality housing, lack of businesses that serve the neighborhoods, falling real estate values, and low wealth. These are often the neighborhoods that have the fewest resources, too, to combat those issues. Resources, professional, technical, and financial. So it's our challenge to make those resources available in the places where they're most needed and to ensure that any revitalization efforts affect the people who have been there all along. And so before I sit down, I just wanted to use this opportunity to promote PPND's catalytic programs, catalytic project grant program that's designed to do just that, to bring resources to the places where they're needed the most. And also to use data well to capture the desired and actual change so that we know that we're actually making a difference. So if you're here representing a city neighborhood or a neighborhood that borders the city of Pittsburgh and you're not already on my mailing list, please come find me after the conference or during the break, and I'll make sure you can get the guidelines. They'll be released in a couple of days. So we've already put out about $800,000 in the first two rounds this year and hope to put out some more within a couple of months. So thanks for your attention this afternoon, and I hope that you enjoy this opportunity to share experiences with each other this afternoon. Thanks.
Thanks, Sarah, and again, thanks to Pittsburgh Partnership for Neighborhood Development for continuing support of PNCIS and the conference in its fourth year now. It's now my pleasure to introduce our keynote speaker, Greg Sanders, who's the information architect in the Chicago Metropolitan Agency for Planning. I also want to say that after Greg's talk, we're going to have a respondents panel, and Chris Blackwell of Penn Hills, community planner, will be one of the respondents. Amanda Settlemyer, who's the executive director of Turtle Creek Valley Council of Governments, will be one of the respondents. Dave Passmore, who's the city of the webmaster, I always remember, forget Dave's title, the city of Pittsburgh, city information systems department, and Brady Hunsicker of the software, who's a software engineer at Google, are our four respondents to Greg's talk. And then after that, we'll open it up for questions from all of you, and I think there's probably going to be a lot of discussion once Greg gets finished. But let me introduce Greg Sanders, the information architect of the Chicago Metropolitan Agency for Planning. He serves as a technical lead for online data systems, including the MetroPulse applications. He co-founded the IDEA Data Sharing Coalition, which is the Illinois Data Exchange Affiliates, in 2006, and the Full Circle Community Mapping and Planning Project in 2004. Greg was previously IT director of the Cleveland Housing Network and senior programmer analyst for the Penske Logistics. He's managed Federal Technology Opportunities Program, which top data projects that some of you I know have been applicants in both Cleveland and Chicago. Greg holds a BA in political science from Oberlin College and a master's degree in mass communications from Kent State. He's a native of Youngstown, so he's familiar with our area, and he's one of our partners in the National Neighborhood Indicators Partnership that's organized through the Urban Institute in Washington. Greg, welcome, and we look forward to your talk. Thanks.
First of all, I want to thank Bob and Sabina for giving me the opportunity to be here today, and also the Federal Reserve for sponsoring the event. And as Sabina mentioned, I'm a native of Youngstown, Ohio. Which means that I love Pittsburgh, because when I was a little kid, my dad used to bring me down here for the museums and the zoo and so on. But also, all four of my grandparents actually come from southwestern Pennsylvania. So the Pennsylvania is sort of in my DNA, and I really love it. So I know that you guys will forgive me when I say that I rooted for the Cleveland Browns all my life, and I still do. So, but that's okay. You guys are forgiving. So, but I'm here to talk about Chicago. And the reason I would like to talk about Chicago is because there's a lot of good things going on there in terms of open data. Chicago has its problems like any city, and like Pittsburgh, and like Cleveland, and like Youngstown. But they've got some good things going on. And so I'm going to start by talking about Chicago, and then we're going to just move on to talk in general about some lessons concerning open data and concerning government transparency. Because I think that out of the experience that we've had in Chicago the past few years, we've had lessons learned, some of them because we succeeded and some of them because we're still struggling. And I think every city is in that position, but there have been some really great things going on there. And then afterwards, I hope we're going to have some lively discussion, because I know if you guys are anything like the people in Chicago, you can talk about community development, economic development, data, open data, government transparency, and those things forever. If somebody would, you know, let you sit here and talk all day and without kicking you out, you'd probably keep going. And that's the way it is in Chicago, too. So I'm going to go ahead and get started and talk about Chicago. So what I'm going to say about Chicago is, the first thing is what I call explosion. And when I say explosion, what I mean is, in a very good way, in 2011, things changed in Chicago, not only in the city, but in the region. And they changed because of a political turnover of leadership. So the former mayor was retired and was replaced by Rahm Emanuel. And the former county board president was replaced by somebody named Tony Preckwinkle. And when I say explosion, I really mean that overnight, the open data situation in Chicago changed in a good way. So this is my rendition of Chicago City Hall in 2010. A mighty fortress. Walls of stone and steel. And if you needed data from these people, believe me, even though they were fine people and many of them were my friends, you had to work really hard to get it. You had to scale the walls and you had to come up with all kinds of justifications and you had to build relationships, and then you were bound by very strict terms of use on what you could do with that data. And this is Chicagoland today. Very different picture. We still have our problems, but everything's coming up roses at the moment. It's all colorful and birds chirping and butterflies and everything. So things have changed, and I want to talk about why they've changed. But before that, I'd like to talk about what happened before. When Chicago City Hall was still a fortress, I was beating my fists and my head against the fortress walls with a group called the Illinois Data Exchange Affiliates. And we thought it was so important that we bring about data transparency and transparent government that we talked the MacArthur Foundation into very generously giving us a grant so that we could actually pay the city and the county to work with us on making data free and open. And we did that, and the city and the county went along with it, but in the long run, very little changed. Almost nothing changed of any lasting value. And this was a 3-year long effort. 3 years of working really hard directly with the city and the county made almost no difference. So what changed? Leadership, starting with this man, because the first thing that President Obama did when he took office was to sign the Open Government Directive. The first thing, his first full day in office. Within a few months, the federal government had launched data.gov. If you haven't been there, check it out. It's now got tens of thousands of data sets. What they did is set a precedent for government entities everywhere to open data. Because once the federal government did it, that set a precedent, and they also set the guidance. The written guidance from OMB was that data shall be free and open, unless there's a heck of a justification to keep it locked up. You probably also recognize the guy in the upper right. That's Rahm Emanuel. That's Obama's longtime chief of staff, and he is now the mayor of Chicago. Governor Quinn down here in the lower left, and Tony Preckwinkle over in the right-hand corner. And I can tell you about Tony Preckwinkle. She's the Cook County Board President. I can tell you about Tony Preckwinkle that she loves data and she knows neighborhood data because she was the fourth ward alderman when our Full Circle project, which is a parcel-level mapping project, came into funding from the federal government, and we started with her ward. And she was all over it. She loved it. She's also not someone to be trifled with, and I can tell you that if you say you're going to do something, Tawny Preckwinkle heard you say you're going to do something, you really better do it, because a couple of times we didn't exactly, and she sort of called us out publicly on that. So she is definitely a force to be reckoned with, and she's totally changing the way Cook County operates. Cook County, as you probably know, has a long tradition of political corruption. Not that Pittsburgh or Cleveland or Youngstown has any of that, mind you. But so this happened very quickly. Rahm Emanuel came in, and he gave the team 120 days to get a open data portal up and running. And they did that. Tawny Preckwinkle came in, and she gave her team 120 days to get an open data portal. And they did that. And it was very successful. And everything, everything suddenly became very easy to find. Data resources on all kinds of things that we never had before. What they did then is take the data portals that they had launched and they federated them, which means that you could go to any one of their data portals. That means the city, the county, and the state of Illinois. And you could type in a search term and you could see all the data resources that matched from any one of those portals. And the reason this was possible was Socrata. Socrata is a data hosting company, a very smart company, and I think a very good company. And they allowed the federal government, the state of Illinois, Cook County, and the city of Chicago to very quickly launch an open data portal, all four of them. And it happened almost immediately once their decision was made to put the data out there. So it's a cloud-based hosting service. And because it's very quick and the customer service is very good, it was a great way for governments to get their data out there. And I'll talk a little bit later about alternatives to Socrata as well, because I think that's really important to keep in mind. So the explosion happened, 2011. And what happened? Well, first of all, I want to talk about why open data is important. I know that everybody in the room knows why open data is important, but I think we have to keep saying it because sometimes we forget why open data is important. We think it's so that we can play games and do charts and maps and cool graphics and so on. And that's what's fun for us. But the real reason that we need these open data portals is that all public policy issues of any importance cross local boundaries. So when I say that they cross local boundaries, I don't mean that public policy is set across boundaries. It's not. Most of the time, public policy is set by municipalities, maybe counties, but it's not set by regions. I work at the Regional Planning Commission, and you know what policies we set? None. All we do is advise people on how they might want to think about a regional approach, and we convene regional groups. But that's not setting policy. Policy is really set at the local level. But the impact of those policies that are set at the local level transcend local boundaries. Think about housing. If housing opportunities are available and a better value proposition is available in another municipality, you go there. Assuming that the schools are good, education. Assuming that the crime rate isn't too high, public safety. Transportation, you're not going to move somewhere where you can't get anywhere else from there. So all these are regional issues, but the policies are generally set at the local level. So in order for that to work, you have to have cross-jurisdictional data sharing. And I'm going to go a step further into the realm of abstraction here and talk again about why we need open data, and particularly at a regional level. And these, I think we could argue about, and maybe some of them, you know, maybe later we can have some arguments about it, but I think it's important that we remember this is not about us playing games with data. This is about important stuff. So government works best when information is generally available for decision making. Society works best when government processes are transparent and well understood. And today, with web and mobile technologies, we have unprecedented opportunities for developing rich information flows across complex urban areas. That's why. So what happened in terms of impact, the first thing that I noticed happening after the open data went up on the web was we all got together and we launched Apps for Metro Chicago. And it was a lot of fun, and also we got some good applications out of it, and some of them actually are now in the marketplace as for-profits. So good things. Meetups have been unbelievable in Chicago. So if you go to the meetup.com and type in Chicago and data, or Chicago and software, or Chicago and any technology-related term, you'll come up with hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of meetups. And a lot of it is all focusing on the open data that's now available. It's just awesome. I don't have, there's not enough days in the month to find all the great meetups in Chicago that have to do with open data. And I'm pretty sure that there's some cool meetups in Pittsburgh too, and I would like to hear about them. But the ones I know about are in Chicago, just really taking off. Code for America. I know that a lot of people in here probably follow Code for America. It's an awesome idea, and it's being, I think it's having real impacts out there. But there's civic hackers that have nothing to do with Code for America. I want to say about civic hackers that we're not talking here about people who break into the CIA's computer systems. Those are hackers, not civic hackers. Hacking has come to mean, in a very positive way, getting inside of systems and turning them to uses that you really need to have solved, to solving problems that you really need to have solved. So those are civic hackers. And the civic hackers have done all kinds of useful things with the open data that was released by the city of Chicago, or by Cook County, or by the state of Illinois. This is just one example, but you know, you can come to this website and see demolitions and violations and building construction and permits and anything else you want to see. I mean, there's crime applications, there's parking applications, there's 311 applications, all of this being done by people who do not work for the government. So it's civic hacking. It's people doing this basically because they think it needs to be done and they love doing the work. But on top of that, there's been also an increase in tech entrepreneurship. So there have been startups who have really honestly made open data a central part of their business model. And that really is, you're talking now about economic growth and workforce development and all kinds of things that are good coming out of open data. That's an important thing to remember, because open data, although, as was said recently at the White House, the evidence for economic growth being driven by open data is still anecdotal, but I think it's very real, and it can be measured at least on a small scale. 1871, the logo up in there on the right-hand side, is the name of it's the 16th floor of the Merchandise Mart in Chicago, and it's a tech incubator. But in addition to being an incubator for tech startups, it's also a place where tech people get together and do the meetups, and they do meetings and conventions. Things like this would have been held in 1871 in Chicago. And so that convening place, a place where technology people can get together, is really kind of important, and a lot of the events that take place at 1871 are focusing on government transparency and open data. Very exciting. And the final thing I'd like to mention here is the Lean Startup Circle, which is another, it's sort of a tech incubation concept. If you haven't read Eric Ries's book called The Lean Startup, it's fantastic. I just recommend it for anybody who's thinking of being in a tech startup or even just being, you know, involved in tech projects. So the first impact is the app contest, the civic hacking, and so on, and entrepreneurship. But the next thing is really important too. Governments need to share data, regardless of whether they're making it open and free to the public. Governments need to share data. I can't emphasize this enough, and I'm sure everybody here has thought about this at one time or another. We can't make good decisions if we don't know what's over the border. You have to know, if you're in a municipality, you have to know what's in the next municipality. If you're in a county, you have to know what's in the next county. If you're a COG, Council of Government, not only you need to know what's going on across the borders of your member groups, but you also have to know what's going on in the next Council of Government. So the first thing, one of the very first things that happened in Chicago was that the city and the county got together and they started sharing data that was now openly available on the web, but they codified that. I mean, they made it institutionalized policy that the city and the county would share data. And they even did some shared services, which saved a whole bunch of money for taxpayers like me. Another impact, though, it goes well beyond the city and the county. Once we set up the precedent of open data, I think we got into the kind of the swing of connecting the entire mega region all the way into Indiana and Wisconsin by data. So the first thing, of course, the Illinois Open Technology Challenge. I have to talk to you about this. The leader, I think one of the thought leaders about open data in the Chicago region is a guy named Daniel X. O'Neill. And Dan is a Pittsburgh native. It's from, I want to say, Northview Heights. Is that Northfield Heights? Is that right? Neighborhood in Pittsburgh. And he's just a great, he's a fantastic person. And he is he was the founder of this Illinois Open Technology Challenge, which is funded by the MacArthur Foundation and Motorola and the state of Illinois. So what they did is they identified some parts of the greater Chicago region that were having serious difficulties with all the issues that have been mentioned here. Okay, housing, you know, property, diminishing property values and dilapidation and crime, and all kinds of civic problems in those areas. So they identified those areas, not only in the Chicago region, but downstate as well. And then they invited the local municipal governments in those areas and local tech people to propose civic apps that could be made with open data. And then they gave prizes, not only to motivate the technology people, but to motivate the local governments to get their data online. And then they gave them a cloud-based hosting service to do it. So this is really a very exciting initiative. We haven't yet seen exactly what's going to come out of this, but it's really something, because they're talking about a mega region, so going well outside of the city of Chicago and even the suburbs, all the way up to Rockford. So that's something to keep an eye on. So the next impact that I found very interesting is that all of a sudden researchers at serious, university-based think tanks got very involved in open data. And that's possibly because all of a sudden everybody started asking these researchers if they could analyze this data. Because don't forget, the government people are not analyzing the data. They've got their hands full. Just getting the data online is a full-time job for some people. But the universities are now being asked to analyze this data because it's mountains and mountains of data. So one of the things that happened is the MacArthur Foundation and University of Chicago got together to create something called the Urban CCD. That's Urban Center for Computation and Data. The gentleman in the middle here is the chief data officer for the city of Chicago. And he, more than anyone else, has driven the explosion of data in the city of Chicago. He's actually a Boston native, but he's in Chicago, and he's got a PhD in criminal justice, came from the police department, and Mayor Emanuel yanked him from the police department and made him chief data officer. He's the one who drove the entire release of data on the city's open data portal. A few days ago, he announced that he's leaving the city to go to the Urban CCD, because the open data is already done. Essentially, they've put out everything that they can get from the city, and it's online now. So I think he just kind of put on his white hat and said, my work is done here. And he moved on to the Urban CCD because he's basically a statistician. He's an analyst. And he's going to be working now on making sense of all that data, with about $1 million from the Bloomberg Foundation to help. So the impact so the tie-in to Brett Goldstein, who was the city's chief data officer, is that he proposed to the Bloomberg Foundation as part of the Data Smart Cities Initiative that he would create an open source analytics platform so that we could make sense of all the open data. So for you techies out there, it's written in Python and R, all open source. And the Bloomberg Foundation agreed that it was a great idea. And so when they open source it, then cities and regions all over the country will be able to use those libraries, which are already out on GitHub. So there was more than $1 million, I'm saying $1 million, but I know it had a lot of zeros after it, and that came from the Bloomberg Foundation. So that's real impact, and remember, this has just been since the beginning of 2011 that all of this has happened. So what do we got now? That's 2.5 years, not even. And the kind of impacts we're already seeing. Now, that doesn't mean that everything is perfect in Chicagoland, and I'm going to go into some of the reasons why in a few minutes. But I also want to back up, because I followed the sort of data transparency issue since I was in Cleveland prior to the turn of the century. So I'm going to back up and talk a little bit about how we got here. And I want to go all the way back to the 1790s when a United States senator under the George Washington administration from Pennsylvania was arguing that the meetings of the United States Congress should be open to journalists so that the data, all the information about government, could be posted in the newspapers. Believe it or not, it used to be closed sessions of Congress. But Senator William McClay of Pennsylvania spearheaded the movement, and of course it didn't happen in his time, but it did happen afterwards. So fast forward to 1966, the Federal Freedom of Information Act. Over the objections of President Johnson, I might add, passed and was afterwards replicated in all but a few of the states. And in 2009, President Obama with the Open Government Directive that I already mentioned. Here is an unsung hero for you, Phil Windley. 2003, Phil Windley became the Chief Information Officer of Utah. And he posted a blog post that's still out there, and the URL is something I hope he never takes it down. It's just fantastic. It was called a Web Services Manifesto. And by the way, when this slide presentation is over, there's a bit.ly URL that you can follow to get to the slide presentation. And this is a Google Doc, and so there's a little option where you can show the comments, the author's comments, so not the author, Phil Windley, but my comments. And in those comments, you'll find a lot of URLs, including the URL to this. So the core argument that Phil Windley put forward was that, at a minimum, all data should be available online as machine-readable text. At the time, that meant XML, not JSON. So as machine-readable text, at a minimum. Then he said, well, yeah, if you want to put it out on the website as something that people can read, that's okay too. But at a minimum, all information has to go out as machine-readable. 2003. So that Web Services Manifesto, among the people who were into open data in 2003, like me, this was a transformative moment, because we realized that somebody inside of government cared about making open data available machine-readable format so that civic hackers or anybody else could do cool things with it. Not too many people mention Phil these days, but truly a hero. So e-government requires that we free data from siloed systems and legacy platforms. Everybody says that now, but Phil said it a long time ago. So in 2007, the 8 principles of open government data, obviously I don't have all 8 of them listed here, but the URL's there at the bottom. Open Government Working Group was just an ad hoc group of people that got together in California, Lawrence Lessig, and included Dan O'Neill from Pittsburgh here, although he was already in Chicago at that time. And they just put down in very simple terms the 8 principles of open government. And if you haven't ever seen that, it's great to check out. So now, 2009, Obama, 2011, City of Chicago and Cook County with their open data portals. And in 2013, the last I checked, 39 of the 50 states have open data portals, 35 U.S. cities and counties have open data portals, 41 countries have open data portals, and there's also open source platforms for doing open data portals. So the CKAN, C-K-A-N stands for Comprehensive Knowledge Archive Network, and that's an open source platform for open data portals. So a couple of things I just want to make some distinctions here. Open data versus open government. The fact that data is out there for you and I to grab off a website doesn't mean we have open government, because open government is really a much bigger process of participation and advice and consent of the public, you know, to guide government policies and so on. That's the first thing. Open data also is not the same as open government, intergovernmental data share, because that's something that really should take place even with data that cannot be openly shared with the public. We still need to have it being exchanged among government agencies. And I think if you think about national security or public safety, you'll think of all kinds of examples where government data sharing is important even when we can't make the data free and open. Open data is also not directly related to open source. The two things sort of go hand in hand, but they really have no necessary connection. I think of it as sort of like two things like music and beer. They really don't necessarily have to be together, but when you find music, you know. Okay, so by the way, just before we started here, because I'm from Youngstown, Ohio, which is one of the polka capitals of the universe, Bob Graddick was kind enough to generously made a gift to me of a recording from the 1950s of a Tamaritza band from Youngstown, Ohio. And I got to tell you, you know, I can't wait to get home and play that sucker, because I am a proud Slovak American.
And have a beer with it.
Yeah, of course, of course. All right, so the other distinction I want to make is about accountability versus empowerment. The Tea Party in this country has done one wonderful thing, which is to really advocate for open government. And it's really all about accountability. And I totally support, I don't support very much that they're advocating, but in this particular realm, they've done a good thing, which is to say that all data should be openly available. And it's about accountability. But accountability also bleeds over into the gotcha mentality. And this is where, this is really crucial in understanding what happened in Chicago. Because in the past, when governments would release data, the first thing that would happen would be everybody who got that data would look at it and say, well, this is wrong. You guys are terrible. You can't even keep track of this stuff. And the second thing that would happen would be they would then look at the data and say, well, this just proves you guys are screw-ups. Because, like, you know, they'd say, well, you know, you've got all these building permits, but you said there was a, you know, not only the data was wrong, but sort of the they were criticizing the government for being incompetent, because they would look at things like crime data and say, well, this just proves you guys don't know how to stop crime. So that gotcha mentality is a big reason why government organizations don't like to release data. In Chicago, there were two people at the Chicago Tribune, actually three. Joe Jermuska, I don't need to say the names, but anyway, there were three people at the Tribune who were involved in taking the city's open data and creating maps and charts and so on for the Tribune. Mostly on the website, but they also then would do the graphics in the newspaper. And the relationship between those folks at the Tribune and Brett Goldstein, the chief data officer for the city, was instrumental in making sure that data would be made free and open. Because the Tribune didn't play gotcha. What they did is when they found some data that was bad, Joe would call up Brett and say, you know what? There's some bad rows of data in here, and we think here's what they're supposed to be. We'll send it over to you. And if they found something that showed that the city wasn't doing very well in certain areas based on the data, they would go ahead and do an article about it without making it an expose. They just said, well, the city has released data now, and we're helping them to analyze that. And yes, in this particular ward, there are issues that the data has brought to light. And that's fine. That's what the press is supposed to do. But the gotcha mentality was just not there. This was really a partnership of the private sector trying to make sense of government data. It changed, it may be a subtle thing, but it really changed everything, because Brett then was very willing to let the data out. Privacy, confidentiality, and public safety are the three areas where we need to keep data from being open. And it's a very real concern. So you can't open up every bit of data, and you shouldn't open up every bit of data. A little story about this. When I first moved to Chicago, I was doing something called the Chicago Area Housing website. And we did get data about building permits, and we got data about property transfers. And we published those on the internet with the names of the people who had gotten the building permit or the property transaction. And I got a phone call from a woman who said, I found my name on your website. I want you to take it off. And I said, okay, I can do that. And I took her name off. And a few days later, I went to a conference, and I attended a session about privacy and confidentiality. And I learned that in several documented cases, abused women had been tracked down by their ex-husbands by simply Googling the name. And I went back from that conference, and I took every personal name and anything that was personally identifiable off of any website that I had running. So we don't need to know when somebody pulls a building permit that it was, you know, Joe Jones. It's useful to know in cases like that if it's an institutional entity, like a bank or something, but we don't really need to know if it's a personal, if it's a, now the city of Chicago disagrees, by the way, they put it all out there. For me personally, I think we don't really need that. But that's just one of the distinctions I wanted to make. So here's where we get into where things are murky and not necessarily such a pretty picture, scalability. So this is a map, I mean, it's very roughly drawn, but it's a map of open data. So the darker colors correspond to where data is fully open. And the lighter colors are where it's not quite so fully open. And when we get way out into the far suburbs, there really isn't any open data. And that's the Chicago region. So the dark, so the very dark core, that's the city of Chicago, but immediately south of that is all those municipalities that are being assisted by Smart Chicago Collaborative, Dan O'Neill's thing. And you know, so they'll be getting some open data. And there's a few in the other suburbs, but really, when we get out into the suburban municipalities, there is no open data in most. And this is a problem for me because, you know, being at the Regional Planning Commission, that's not an acceptable situation. So when we released, when CMAP, the Chicago Metropolitan Agency for Planning, released the GoTo 2040 Comprehensive Plan for the region, it covers everything. Transportation, natural resources, blah, blah, blah. All good stuff. All very, very important. But we only highlighted, I think, 12 high-level factors that we felt were the most important. One of those things was open data, that is, access to information. So there's a URL, again, if anybody, I think it's down here. Yeah. If anybody would care to take a look at that, it's our way of saying open access to information is a regionally vital piece of what we do. So we're really trying to go beyond the single jurisdiction thing, because currently data sharing is a single jurisdiction activity. The city of Chicago is a single jurisdiction, and they can say, the mayor can say to the employees at City Hall, you will put your data out on the web. And the governor can do the same thing for state employees and Cook County Board. Well, it's not quite as easy there because there's some elected officials like the county assessor who doesn't have to listen to the board president. But anyway, a single jurisdiction is a very easy thing to release data from. But if you're talking about a metropolitan region, there's no one that has the power or authority to tell municipalities they have to share data. The only thing that, you know, is an exception to that is the FOIA, the Freedom of Information Act, saying if somebody requests the data, you have to give it to them, unless you have a really good reason not to. So there's no executive authority, and that means that scaling the open data across the region involves not only technology, because we can do this now, right? We can do this technologically, but it requires engagement, persuasion, negotiation, and perseverance, all of which we're still having in Chicago because we haven't yet solved this problem. We're still on the part about perseverance. That's where we're still, you know, in that kind of realm. We're still hanging on, but we haven't really solved this problem. And I'd love to see a region like Pittsburgh solve the problem. So here's the key. There's a lot of great data that is not controlled by the county or the state or the federal government. It's controlled by the local municipality or township if it's unincorporated. This list, these are not trivial things. These are things we need to know. Not only the municipalities need to know that for their own purposes, and they generally do, but it's the kind of thing where if you're doing regional planning, or if you're a council of government, or even if you just want to, you know, have better understanding of your neighbors, these are things that would be very useful. And yet they're held by municipalities, and in the Chicago region alone, there are 285 of those. This presents problems of a very serious kind, not only technological, but first and foremost, it's sort of a culture of open data sharing that would have to then be spread to those 285 municipalities and maintained over a period of years. So strategies for scaling up open data across a region, there's a whole bunch of ways. One that I didn't even put on here is, well, how about if every municipality just hosts their own open data portal? Probably not a credible alternative. It's certainly possible. First of all, I doubt that it's going to happen. And secondly, do you really want that? I don't think so. So I didn't add it to this list. But here's three. Allow smaller units of government to host the data on the portals of larger entities. Cook County actually made this offer. They said anybody, any municipality in Cook County can post their data on our portal. There's 124 municipalities in Cook County. I don't think any of them did it. Maybe some, maybe a few, but I don't think any of them really did it. And this goes to show you that this is not an easy problem to solve. The second way to do this would be to create a collaborative cloud portal serving many municipalities. This is what Dan and his Smart Chicago, the Illinois Technology Challenge, are really trying to do, is create a separate portal where these folks can put their data. And there's also something called GIS Consortium, which has been around for, I don't know, 20 years. And they have a similar thing, but they don't really share outside of that consortium. So it is what it is. The third one is the one that I like, is create an open platform where both governmental and non-governmental organizations, I think the university here might have some data that might be worth putting on the web, can post data and documents. CCAN framework is it really excels at this. It's open source. You can download the source code. Will take you maybe, I don't know, 5 minutes to download and install. And you can then let anybody post their data on that. And of course, you can customize it so that not just anyone can load their data on it. So that's a good alternative. Once you have open data portals up there, municipal, county, whatever, they can be federated. And they don't need to be on the same platform to be federated. So you can have a Socrata website talking to a CCAN website. That's not a problem. And that way, if somebody comes to the portal and types in a word, in the search window, it can actually find it regardless of where the data actually resides. So federation is probably going to be a big part of what we do in the future. So here's some challenges. Discoverability is probably the number one challenge. Because if you're trying to make data easily available, you can't have 27 mouse clicks in order to find it. It really has to be something simpler than that. Semantic interoperability, that's just two big words. What that means is that if I call something a building permit and somebody else calls something a building permit, are we talking about the same thing? And there's a lot of issues there because not every government agency operates the same way. They don't store their data the same way, et cetera. ETL is extract, transform, and load. In other words, this is how we get raw data into the database as a really kind of standardized and cleansed product that can be easily used. Privacy and public safety, I already talked about. Data quality, obviously, just needs to be there, but it's never going to be perfect. The gotcha mentality that I mentioned, civic hackers and tech firms, we need to, and I'll talk about each of these in order, but and then there's the thing that Dan calls, where are the people? And what that really means is, are we serving the people we think we're serving? Are we serving the folks who are going to be the end users of these systems? So decisions we have to make. Are we going to create a data registry or a data file hosting platform? The difference is that if you upload your data onto, say, the Socrata platform, you're putting it on a physical server somewhere in Socrata's cloud. If you do a registry, what you're uploading into the database is a pointer to, say, a municipal website, so that the municipality, if they've already got data posted somewhere, you don't need to make them upload it to the cloud. All you need is a pointer to where it lives. A pointer is a URL. So you can have a registry, and that's an open data portal. If you have nothing but a big list of pointers to somebody else's website, that's fine. We don't need to have data being duplicated in different copies, so that's something to keep in mind. Should we focus on raw data, analytics, or visualizations? Everybody has their favorite. Basically, right now, the concept for most governments is, look, all we're going to do is put the data out there, and you all can figure out what to do with it. Runtime APIs versus download APIs. For any techies out there, this is an important thing. I create runtime APIs, but you know what that means is that an application can directly consume the data at runtime in machine-readable format. A download API means that if you go to a particular URL, you get to download an Excel file and you can do what you want with it. There's a big difference. I don't want to belabor that point, but it is a decision to make. Socrata versus CCAN versus who knows what. In Philadelphia, they've got their own open data platform that they created from scratch, which is great, fine. And we're sure to see more open data platforms coming in the future. So these are some of the decision points. With discoverability, there's different ways to make things discoverable. You can easily, you know, create a sort of a Google searchable thing that really just is keyword search. That's fine. But most often, what you're going to have in your open data portal is going to be a list of open data resources. It's not going to index the files themselves. So if you have data files and they're about, say, one particular community, you're not going to get a search of those data files. All you're going to do is get a search of whatever metadata was typed in about that data file. So it's a big issue. But discoverability really is, and the same thing with data visualizations. I mean, you can't really, the only thing you can do is make that discoverable by the keywords you put in. So that's a big piece. And this is kind of what I just mentioned. Open data portals typically index the metadata, but not the content of the uploaded files. Semantic interoperability, what do we call things? How do we count things? If you're going to aggregate data from many municipalities or counties or whatever, it's almost impossible to do that without standard definitions, or at least data fields which you can identify as being what, you know, you can say permit amount, and it should be, you know, somebody should be able to figure out from looking at the column name that permit amount means permit amount. ETL, I think there's enormous potential to sharing the code that we all write for extracting data and loading it into the database. This is something that we all replicate this. And really, if you use GitHub, if everybody uses GitHub, then I think that this could be a tremendous help for each other. Because, you know, I can pull your code down and run my ETL, and you can pull my code down and run the ETL. Privacy and public safety, I think I said enough about this, but the last point I'm making here is when in doubt, leave it out. If you really think that it's going to injure somebody's privacy or public safety, leave it out. Data quality, it's never going to be perfect. We still need to leave the data in a place where we can use it. So I talked a little bit about the gotcha mentality, and I think that enough said about that. Where should we focus our attention? You know, no matter how much we do with open data, somebody's going to be saying, well, we should do more. People are going to say, if we release data visualizations, people are going to say, well, we want the raw data. And if you release raw data, people are going to say, well, we don't understand the raw data. We need to have it analyzed. So we have to focus, you know, and everybody can focus on a different piece. Typically, governments are going to focus on getting the raw data out, and other folks are going to focus on doing other things with the raw data. Runtime APIs, again, that's not crucial to know, but okay. Quick point here. Considering open data portals, so Socrata is a cloud-based solution. It's ideal for single jurisdictions with long-term funding because it does cost money. It's a subscription basis. And or a need for rapid launch. CCAN is ideal for multi-jurisdictional collaboratives or agencies with lots of technical expertise because you have to customize it yourself, Python. So here is Mr. O'Neill, and here's a quote that I really love. Dozens of developers looking at each other in conference rooms over pizza is never going to lead to making lives better in Chicago without the active involvement of real residents. So what Dan did is he's actually got funding to pay people money to test and give feedback on the applications that are being developed with the open data. Great idea. He's not even giving them a lot of money. It's like a $5 gift card every time they test an app. It gives us absolutely crucial feedback about the applications we're creating. So whatever it takes to get people to weigh in and tell you that they are or are not finding that application useful, I think we need to do. That may be the most important thing of all. So the conclusions that I have here today, the first one comes from Tim O'Reilly, who is the guru of government of open technologies. And by the way, a little story about this. I met Tim O'Reilly at CityCamp a couple years ago, and we were talking about open data, and I said, you know, I've tried in this region, and I can't get anybody to share data. And this was about 6 months before Rahm Emanuel became mayor. And Tim O'Reilly very seriously looked across the table at me, and he said, well, let's just assume that open data is something that's just going to happen eventually. And I said, oh, you're not from Illinois. You're from California. You don't understand how bad Illinois is. And, of course, 6 months later, you know, Rahm Emanuel becomes mayor and waves his magic wand, and all of a sudden there's like 10,000 data sets open on the web. But anyway, Tim was right. What Tim, he coined the term government as platform. And what that means is that we are not application providers. Government is about creating the raw materials that others will use to create applications. So Chicago succeeded because of specific individuals in leadership positions. No Rahm Emanuel, no Brett Goldstein, no open data. We tried many years. Extending open data from the central cities to the municipalities across the metro region is a great challenge, hugely important. And I think we're going to hear a lot about that from some of our panel here. Open data will have much greater impact if end users are brought into the process at every step. Oops, wrong way. Okay, I'm on Twitter, at Greg Sanders. I also moderate, although I haven't done much with it lately, but the Google Plus community called Open Data for Metro Regions. And the slides for this presentation are available at this bit.ly address. Don't forget, if you want to see the comments, when you run this, there's a, I don't know if you can all see it, but right down here at the bottom, you have options. And you can click open speaker notes. So there's a bunch of URLs I put in there that didn't, there wasn't room for them in the actual slide presentation. So I'm just going to leave this piece up in case people want to copy down the bit.ly address. Thank you.
Thanks, Greg. That was amazing. I think everybody's head's swirling right now trying to think of how this is going to link in with their community, their neighborhood, the data they already have, the things they're thinking about putting out, and there's a lot of excitement. We can take a couple of questions while we set up our response panel. So if anybody's got a couple of quick questions, but then we'll have, of course, lots of time during this next almost hour for discussion. Someone have a quick question here? Mm-hmm, go ahead.
I wonder if there was a difference in the having a registry. If the individual municipalities were more apt to allow that connection because they have the opportunity for a liability. Click off on.
Right?
Yeah, good question.
So I heard part of that question, but I want to make sure that I understand.
Well, having a pointer that goes to a registry that then goes to a city or county or website of some sort with the data,
yeah.
Does that open the door for more cooperation because they have the opportunity for a liability form to check off?
Good question. My own policy is that we don't put pointers to anything that we don't have approval for from the municipality. So we put out, there's actually one here. This is Village of Barrington Hills. This is kind of a guinea pig test case for us. This is like ordinances and operating budgets and everything. As far as the liability, I think that you could probably have a blanket liability on the data sharing hub where the pointers are located. But it's not something I've really thought of, to be honest. That's a great question. But I think if somewhere right up here, you know, you could have a disclaimer or click here saying, yes, I understand. But that way, you wouldn't have to have 285 municipalities coming up with that language. So that's a good point.
Any other quick question here? Go ahead.
The open data portals, are those considered official records for the government offices? And do those government offices access the same records the same way the citizens would?
I'm sure that there's a lot of data that doesn't make it onto the portal. I would assume there is, because there's confidential information. But
they're official government records?
Well, I don't think that... So the answer, short answer is I don't know.
Okay.
But I think the longer answer would be that I don't know that that has been hashed out in the courts or at the federal level. The federal guidance has been very clear that, you know, open data is to be made open whenever possible. Whether that means it's official record or not, I don't know that there's a definitive answer on that one yet. Sorry.
Can I ask a part two then?
Yeah.
What did they do with all the archives? Because I know scanning is a big challenge because it's so expensive. Did they just do a day forward process, or do they have a long-term plan to bring all the archives?
Yeah, so this particular municipality here, this is the Village of Barrington Hills, and we chose them because they have a lot of great data, and we put them onto our open data sharing platform. They got the public library to scan the old agendas and ordinances and codes and everything into searchable PDFs, not just image PDFs, but searchable ones. and gradually they're putting them on them. And it's a lot of work, but it's a tremendous, it's a treasure trove of information about what that particular municipality has done over the years. So I think that you can't expect every municipality to do that. But to the extent that you can do it, it's great. But otherwise, it's on a go forward. Yeah.
Okay, one more, then we'll go.
You talked a little bit about the University of Chicago's role in analyzing data. I'm wondering if you've had any work with non-governmental institutions in sharing data on these platforms, such as the university sharing data or health institutions sharing data.
Providing data. Yeah. So this portal here, which is CMAPS, was intended to do that. It hasn't been a priority yet. But one of the reasons that we chose CCAN instead of Socrata is that we can extend it to anybody without paying extra money. Socrata, they're a very smart company and they charge for people who use their system. So we weren't able to add all 10 universities from the Chicago area or whatever free of charge. So with this one, because it's open source, it's free of charge. Everything about CCAN is free of charge, unless you want it customized. And we paid New Amsterdam Ideas out of New York to come and customize ours because we wanted all kinds of whistles and bells. But anyway, we certainly expect that the universities will eventually post data on this hub.
Okay.